Hi, this is Shane Gibson's Sales and Social Media Podcast from closingbigger.net. Today, we've got Leanne Hoagland-Smith with us today. Thank you very much for joining us.
And Shane, thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. Now, Leanne's the author of the book, Be the Red Jacket in a Sea of Gray Suits, and it's the keys to unlocking sales success. And it's actually a book, I got a couple ways, how I met Leanne. Number one, Leanne has been now in the coaching and business development space for 18 years. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And how I met Leanne is actually we were both part of a network of authors. I got involved with it, now probably about 6 years ago. There was 14 of us. Now there's over 40 of us. And we support, promote, and share best practices with each other. And so Leanne's part of that network. And last year I ordered several copies of her book and a number of other books for the sales team I was working with a client. And I've been meaning to reach out and connect, and finally I've got her on the show. So thank you again for joining us. And maybe, Leanne, if you can give us a little bit of background on kind of how you got into this space, the type of companies you work with, and what inspired you to write the book.
Well, okay. I got into this space because I've been in sales most of my professional career in one way or another. I retired after 22 years of being in industrial sales. I had the distinction of being the first inside sales woman in the Chicagoland area selling the very romantic industry of pipe valves and fittings.
Fantastic.
And I also was the chief purchasing agent for that organization as well. Then I went into retirement earned my master's, lost my job as a teacher, decided to put on the entrepreneurial hat 18 years ago, as you noted, started working with the company I retired from in building up their inside sales team to be something you're familiar with, not just order takers. They were doing a lot of that, and having them understand how to build those relationships so that they would become the first person the client would seek. And at that time, that market was very competitive. Profit margins were very narrow. So it was really important to hold on to loyal customers. The book is actually probably the outgrowth of all those experiences. I just saw a lot of small business owners making just real common mistakes in their interactions with potential clients, with centers of influence, with professional colleagues. A lot of the basics are presumed, and I think a lot of salespeople just really don't understand those basics. As in the book, the first thing we talk about is your values. And you know, no one likes a used car salesman because a lot of them are viewed as not having really good values. And just building upon that, bringing in some marketing ideas, understanding color, understanding some of those soft sales selling skills from active listening to those open-ended questions and occasionally those closed-ended questions.
Yeah, I find it interesting because more and more in the tech space, I find I'm running into, in all sides of organizations, especially when you get into a call center environment, I find that, or an inbound sales team environment, a lot of focus on how awesome our product is, yet the person on the phone is missing almost all of the buying cues or the concerns of the customers. They're very focused on talking and not on actually listening and developing a relationship. Or even displaying the values of the organization. So I think that, you know, for me, that was why that your book was so great, especially with those team members who were missing the foundation, it was something I could give to them. They could at least get a baseline of understanding truly what, I guess, the profession of selling looks like. Like, what does a professional, sales professional look like? Now, there's three areas. What's the best domain name for someone to find you at? So I'm going to refer to your blog a few times, but if someone was to listening to this podcast and wants to look you up at the same time, what's the best way to find you?
I think the blog is still the best way. It's increase-sales-coach.com.
Great. Okay, so we can send them there. And then you're at Coach Lee on Twitter, which is...
On Twitter.
Typically, correct. How I interact with you mostly. And so so I was thinking of three things. Number one, sales coaching. And this is something that's kind of close to my heart. Before I really started speaking a lot, when I first began my career as a consultant, after I got out of working in the entrepreneurial space, I really started in the sales coaching space. And that was now... boy, that's 20 years ago. But when I look at it, it's such an important skill, and yet it's still overlooked as far as a core activity, even for sales managers to do. And so I guess that's what I'd like to kind of ask you about is maybe defining for audience, you know, what is sales coaching? What's the difference between managing and coaching a sales team? Maybe we could start with that.
Well, that's a wide breadth. I think the easiest explanation is managing is leading others for results. Coaching leads the individual to the results.
That's a great distinction, and I think that's I mean it's part of it is I had a coach not for sales but for organization, and I think that was a great one. And for me, anyways, and the big one for him was kind of another analogy was he talked about the fact that, you know, that coaches sharpen your axe, that they help kind of fine tune your approach. You're out there chopping wood; they might give you the strategy how to chop the wood, but let you work on distinctions of that. But they also sharpen your axe and keep you focused on what's important. Make sure you have the right tools. And so, when I think about managers, sales managers, I find, you know, a lot of them are busy measuring dashboards and KPIs and going to meetings and doing performance reviews, but I don't see enough coaching happening. And, you know, why do you think that is? Or do you think it even is the manager's role to coach?
I think it depends upon what the goals, the overall reaching goals of the organization are. So some managers, you know, think they're coaches, and you and I may have a little difference of opinion as far as how do we define coaching. Mm-hmm. I'm a purist. I believe coaching comes from the inside of the individual. A coach is to provide an opportunity for that person to find their own answers. As soon as a coach starts giving strategies or starts giving ideas, then we're really kind of migrating into that consulting role. And my sense is in today's market, coaches are sometimes wearing not only that coaching hat, but kind of like that three-pointed colonial hat, where one point's coaching, one point's managing, and then there's another one just facilitating or teaching. And I think all of those dynamics work together for the effective sales manager, whether he or she is managing a team of 10 to 50, or for that small business owner who's only managing a few salespeople.
So from you coach largely organizations with sort of 99 employees or fewer is sort of the target market that you shared with me. So really the small of kind of mid-size enterprise, and that could have anywhere from, I'm assuming, you know, 5 to 20 salespeople on their team, and a lot of them are coached by the founder of the company, who may be awesome at making widgets, but not necessarily, having a sales background. And a lot of this grows organically. At what point do you find organizations say, "Hey, you know what? It's time for me to reach out to a sales professional like Leanne to coach my team." You know, typically, you know, at what point do you think it's wise for someone to look for outside help?
Unfortunately, it usually happens when sales stink.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're having some turnover issues, some other operational issues. And what I've experienced is the small business owners and mid-sized business owners believe sales, the lack of sales, is the problem.
Yes.
Where the real problem is their management, their leadership. Because they're the ones that are enabling, enforcing whatever E-word you want to use to not get those results.
Yeah, that's interesting because this is something that, you know, if you've, I think one of our, I forget who said it in our network of sales authors, but I remember one of them saying just the other day, you know, come back to me who said this possibly, was that, you know, if you've got $100 to spend on training in your sales team, you know, spend the first 80 on your manager, because they're really the one that in many cases makes or breaks the team. You know, you can train, you can invest in your team a lot, but if that manager doesn't have the tools, then in many cases that's the real block in moving things forward. Do you agree with that, or what are your thoughts on that?
I think that's an excellent point. I call it the super salesman supervisor syndrome. In many cases, for small to mid-sized companies, the sales manager has been promoted because he or she were the super salesperson.
Yes.
And now they go into management, and an entirely different set of skills is required to be an effective manager slash leader. And I agree that has to be developed first, because what will happen is you send your sales team to training. I've seen this so many times. They come back, they give the sales manager what they've learned. The sales manager says, well, that won't work. I don't do it that way. Forget what you heard there.
The other side, the manager sits to the training, but they don't really have sales coaching skills or sales management skills because they're a brand new promoted sales superstar. And they come back and say, well, my team doesn't want to do it that way, so I guess we're not doing it. Because they're not, you know, they're sort of, in many cases, don't have the skill set to reinforce a new process in many cases. Now, that doesn't happen all the time. I'd say that's more likely to happen in a small to mid-sized organization. But that's kind of because you grab the talent that you've got and you promote them to manage the team. So talking about these teams, and you've worked with a lot of sales teams over many years, is what are 3 to 5 things or shifts that sales teams can make that you find can really boost sales success rates? So I'm sure you've seen all kinds of challenges, but what are like the 3 to 5 big ones? Maybe 3 is good unless we want to be on the phone here for a couple hours, but what would you say are the big ones you notice?
Right now, a big one I noticed, I think it came out from the relationship selling, the consultative selling, is emotional intelligence. More and more salespeople who understand emotional intelligence, which goes into those areas of neuro-linguistic programming, body language, all of that through the understanding of the works of Goleman and others, has really started to become much more prevalent. And we also see that through some of the content marketing, how articles are structured, how they're emotionally centered. So they do grab the attention of potential clients. Another, I guess, aspect I see is a lot more linkage to the overall organizational goals. Before, marketing, selling were separate. The overall organizational goals weren't shared. And now I'm seeing a little bit more flexibility in letting the organization know where the organization is going, so that everyone gets behind those goals, regardless of their roles. And I think this segues now into corporate culture through alignment. And alignment is also becoming another area where let's align everything so that the sales process is seamless and it creates efficiency, effectiveness, without having the client feel like he or she is just, you know, another dollar sign.
So kind of going back to, and that another dollar sign analogy, you know, comes good or comment, kind of rolls back to the emotional intelligence and the empathy side of the salesperson. I believe that, yes, I totally agree with you that emotional intelligence and social intelligence, and Goleman's last book on the sort of that genre, the one on social intelligence, was awesome. And is that something you can train for, or you know, or do you think it's easier to hire for that? To just hire for social intelligence, maybe train for sales effectiveness. What would you do if you had your, if you had to hire, if you had to build a team of sales, 10 salespeople, you know, would you right off the bat be hiring for that skill, or do you feel you can actually train for social intelligence?
Oh, I think you can develop social intelligence. I don't know if you can train. We train dogs. We develop people.
Awesome. Okay, I love it.
Yeah. So you can train. I think what we're seeing a lot more of with all of the psychometric assessments out there, that is part of the emotional intelligence, the cultural awareness. Small businesses, mid-sized businesses are starting to see the value mm-hmm. of some of those assessments, especially when it comes in sales. I have one, and I've given it to over 500 people, of which about 50 were top sales performers earning $100,000 or more. And I have found one data point that is consistent with each of those individuals. It's all shared the same. And there are other assessments out there with other data points that can be very good predictive, as well as you can predict human behavior. And I think that you can determine, does this person have the potential of being empathetic? Does this person have the potential of being human and not just being that order taker?
So do you think that the empathy development can be environmental? So if you've got a great sales culture in your organization, you've got someone who maybe isn't behaving highly empathetic initially, just because of maybe the sales background they come from, or they're brand new to the process, that, you know, that environment and your culture can actually help foster and bring out the empathy in an individual?
I absolutely agree. To understand emotional intelligence, it also helps to understand that men have a little less inherent emotional intelligence than women. Emotional intelligence also increases as we get older.
Now, do you think, I'll stop you on the men's side there, obviously, being a man. Now, do you say inherent, do you mean potential for or displayed because of social behavioral archetypes?
No, I mean inherent as in our DNA. Even Goleman had talked about that women, by the way their brains are wired, are just a little more emotionally intelligent. Not a lot, just they have a little bit of an advantage.
Interesting. Okay, and I would would kind of make sense for, even if you look at the fact that women are starting more businesses today than men, and although their businesses don't tend to grow as large as men's businesses on average, they tend to have a higher success rate, so lower bankruptcy rate, and happier teams. And I guess that would make sense. You know, maybe a bit more risk aversion and a bit more empathy. So that's interesting, and I guess I could see how that would align with even a sales team. So around those other attributes around sales success, the other one you talked about is sales and marketing alignment, which is, you know, I wouldn't call it a buzzword of the last couple of years, but it definitely is in the forefront of a lot of planning. Sometimes I think it's a bit of the tail wagging the dog, so to speak, where marketing is telling sales what they should focus on. But I find that sales is talking every day to the customer, not looking at a dashboard of data. And so, you know, how does that alignment happen? What do you think, you know, what have you seen that's worked to get sales and marketing to align? Is there any tips you'd give an organization that's just beginning that voyage?
My first tip is don't keep them separate. Sales, marketing, selling, and what I call keeping are essentially the sales process. Your marketing is all about attracting attention, getting that handshake, getting that smile out there, sifting through all your sales leads, if you're seeking, and then finding out, oh, does our solution meet some of their wants or needs? And then you go into the selling phase of the sales process. And then when everything's said and done, now you can come back after the order solution has been delivered You can ask for 3 referrals. You can keep in contact. That's where we have that nurture marketing happening, so to speak. And through that, those relationships, we pick up referrals. And we all know referrals are probably the easiest way to get new business.
Absolutely. And it's, now referrals, let's say, it's a good segue, marketing, referrals, and I move into like the social media space. Now, you know, I'm a little bit biased about social media, being that I do a lot of work with social selling and social selling strategies. But I also have seen it done bad in a number of ways, and it's quite misunderstood in many aspects. And so I guess I'd like to kind of open that up, is that, you know, what's the, do you find that a lot of the organizations you're working in sort of that 99 people and below, eight, I guess in Canadian dollars, $10 million and below in revenues kind of business, is social selling something that's important to organizations of this size? Do you find that that's one of the things that they reach out to you for help on or advice? What do you find in that market segment?
What I'm finding is they believe it is important. They don't really know how to do it. And unfortunately, much of the social selling, social marketing training they are receiving is terrible. I know you, Shane, I know you do a great job. It's just we have marketing agencies here in the Midwest whose own social media presence is very weak, telling others what they should do, which I have a real problem with. And social selling is, you know, people buy from people, and it's a two-way street. When you start looking at that social media, you mentioned the group we belong to. It's a very strong community, and we share each other's posts. We don't necessarily have to agree with everyone, but we are sharing, we are providing information, really good quality content, to our communities that we're involved in. And a lot of people don't get it. I see it on LinkedIn posts. I'm going to be doing a keynote in February. And as I've been keeping track of some of the people posting LinkedIn Pulse articles, their reads, if they get 20 reads, you know, that's really high for them. And you and I know, with all the articles being posted, you know, in the first, you know, day, if you get a couple hundred reads, that's really not too bad.
Yes.
As, you know, looking at the people who are following you. So a lot of the companies don't get it. They look at it as a one-way street. They're pitching. They're not looking for engagement. They're not looking to share quality information. And then they obviously don't know how to use social selling as a prospecting tool as well.
Yeah, and that was kind of my next question was, you know, and I'm seeing the shift, you know, in certain market segments where, you know, I mean, people have been beating up on cold calling for quite some time now, saying it's outdated. And I would agree in most verticals, there's, if you combine really good marketing with social selling and just doing really great work so you get referrals, that, you know, if you've been in business for, you know, more than 3 years, cold calling probably shouldn't be on your top list of things you want your sales team doing. Now, I've seen a lot of cold prospecting using LinkedIn now, and I'm finding more and more teams are moving towards that. Is that something that you're seeing as well?
Yes, I'm seeing it as well, and I'm also seeing it, again, done poorly.
I would say, yeah, like 8 out of 10 that I get are not done well.
Yeah. People connect just to have access to somebody else's second-degree connections, and the next thing you know, you have an email, you know, come to my training on this, or attend my seminar, or buy my book. And it's really disheartening because these so-called experts are just making LinkedIn almost a toxic environment for some.
Well, and I think that's interesting because, you know, whoever's in your network, it shapes your experience, whether it's a business function you go to or who you follow on Twitter or who you're connected with on LinkedIn. So, you know, I think that, yeah, it's really, you can get inundated, you know, depending upon who's in your network. And, you know, and that comes back to what you talked about earlier, which is social intelligence and emotional intelligence, kind of the number of people who don't really know that it's not okay to pitch someone like right away after you connect with them on LinkedIn. You might want to have a conversation first and get to know their business and maybe help, maybe send them a lead, you know, and then figure out if they're even in your target market, like ask a few questions. And so, interesting that you were, you know, I don't think of it as toxic, but I definitely think it's a lot of waste. Why would you push away 95 people to close 5? Because that doesn't seem to make sense, but that's what kind of cold pitching does in many cases. That's my rant, and, though. But
yeah. And when you mentioned social selling, I'm a firm believer in this quote, even before social selling, but even more so, it's Teddy Roosevelt says, "No one cares how much you know until they know how much you care." And when we have that attitude as salespeople, whether we're a single office, home office, whether we're in a sales team of 5 to 500, that I believe is a differentiation, because you're not looking out for you first, you're looking out for others.
Yes. And I think that that intent comes through every bit, even, you know, especially on the phone, even your tone of voice. And I think that's key. And I think people have all the time in the world. Salespeople who have got bad sales skills but good intent and are actually their heart's in the right place, and I don't know if you're the same, but I find I have all the time in the world for them on the phone, let's say. They call me up. We're supposed to have a meeting. I can feel that they're not totally experienced, but they really believe in what they're doing. And I find that that person, and they believe they can help. I think that person I have all the time in the world for. The one with who's just so methodical and really sees this as a number, I think that kind of, for me, is the big turnoff. And I think that that translates so well into LinkedIn. You can feel the same behaviors. Thinking about who are your mentors? Like, I think mentors or thought leaders are so important when we're developing ourselves as a sales professional. So if there's an individual salesperson listening to this show right now, or there's a sales manager, and they're looking for, you know, 2 or 3 great resources, you know, beyond your website, of course, that, you know, they can use to improve their sales skills, build their emotional intelligence, improve their sales process. Who are some of your go-to thought leaders or people who've inspired you?
Well, outside of my father, who was a salesman his whole life.
Fantastic.
Contemporarily speaking, one is my favorite is Daniel Pink.
Great.
I just think To Sell as Human is a book all salespeople should have in their library today. He really goes into the human aspect of selling there. We're all in sales. Some of us just get paid to do it while others don't.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone's selling. You know, parents are selling education to their children. Teachers are selling learning to their students. We're all in sales. That's one. I find his books extremely enjoyable. I'm rereading some old Peter Drucker. I'm a big Peter Drucker fan. And I think he had words of wisdom that some people need to remember. other people, we have so many in our group. Dan Walshmit is somebody I enjoy reading because he's very edgy.
Absolutely. I mean, literally, that's his book, Edgy Conversations. Yeah, I've had him on the show, and he's fun. He is edgy.
Yeah, he is, but he's still, and he's also fun, too. You know, those are some that come to mind. Jeb Blunt, who is the publisher of my book, who I got to know rather well, writes well, very no-nonsense, you know, not necessarily what we call traditional sales, but still very practical-driven.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I still like some, I read a lot of philosophy because we're dealing with human beings. And we're not dealing with numbers. For the most part, for my ideal clients, as you and I talked, I don't work with real super large organizations. That's never been a joy for me.
Yeah.
I prefer working with smaller firms where we can really see results very quickly, and we can identify gaps even quicker. So that's, you know, what I enjoy doing. So those are a few.
Fantastic. So just kind of wrapping the show up here, I'd love to finish off with, you know, again, you've coached hundreds, I don't know, maybe thousands, hundreds at least, bare minimum, hundreds of sales professionals. And if you were just to give advice to our listeners today as a sales professional, what are three things they could do tomorrow to improve their sales, like, really quickly, like three things that could get them on the right track? What were three things, pieces of advice that you could give them to really get rolling tomorrow or right now, today, as we're listening to the show?
Okay, real simple. Have clarity of where you're going. Have clarity about how you're going to get there. And then finally, have clarity in how you will measure when you are where you want to be. It's clarity. I think top sales performers can answer those three clarity questions very quickly.
Fantastic. Can you repeat those questions one more time for our listeners so they've got them?
Have clarity as to where you're going. Have clarity as to how you're going to get there. And finally, have clarity as to how you will measure the results of getting to where you want to be.
Fantastic. Those are, I think, three that even every business owner should be able to answer really quickly. And I think that's the great thing is that, you know what, if you're in sales, you're in business. So, look, Leanne, thank you very much for coming on the show today. If you want to learn more about Leanne Hoagland-Smith, you can visit increase-sales-coach.com. You can also follow her on @CoachLee, where she shares great insights all the time. And of course, I'll also provide a link to her book, which is about being the red jacket in sales in a sea of gray suits, which is a fantastic book. And thank you very much for being on the show.
Well, again, Shane, thank you so much for having me. It's been a real joy.
Thank you. Look, this is Shane Gibson's podcast from closingbigger.net.